This is the last day of this January 2018 Rohatsu 7-Day Sesshin. We'll take up a koan today. This is number 42 in the Blue Cliff record, Layman Pong's Beautiful Snowflakes. In my defense, some of you may have predicted it, but in my defense, it has been 3 years since I've done this koan. Here's how it reads. When Layman Pong took leave of Yaksan, the latter asked 10 Zen students to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. The layman, pointing to the falling snowflakes, said, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." Then one of the Zen students named Zenkaku asked, "Then where do they fall?" The layman slapped him. Zenkaku said, "Even a layman shouldn't be so crude." The layman said, "Though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you." Zenkaku said, "What about you?" Again, the layman slapped him and said, "You look, but you are blind. You speak, but you are mute." And then Secho's comment, "When Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it." So some biographical material about Layman Pong. He's one of the three most illustrious enlightened laymen in Buddhist history. The other two being Fudaishi, also Chinese, and Vimalakirti. His dates, Layman Pong's dates, are, well, the 8th century. He trained under the two greatest teachers of his era, Shuto and Mazu, and gained realization under both of them. His wife, and I'm reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. His wife and daughter were also Zen practitioners, and stories about this entire lay household's attainment of the way are unique in the records. He began training under Shuto. By the way, these two, Shuto and Mazu, there was a saying at the time that they divided the world of Zen between them. He began under Shuto in 785 when he was already 45 years old. And this is the record of his realization. When he met Shuto, he asked him, that is, Pong asked him, "Who is the one who is not a companion to the 10,000 dharmas?" It was beyond the 10,000 things. Shuto quickly covered Pong's mouth with his hand. And with that, Pong had a realization. One day, Shuto asked him, "What have you been doing each day since we last saw each other?" Pong said, "If you ask about daily affairs, then nothing can be said." And then he recited the following verse. "In my daily life, there are no other chores than those that happen to fall into my hands. Nothing I choose, nothing reject. Nowhere is there a dew, nowhere a slip. I have no other emblems of my glory than the mountains and hills without a spot of dust. My magical powers and spiritual exercise consist in drawing water and carrying firewood. Those last two lines are especially famous. My magical powers and spiritual exercise consist in drawing water and carrying firewood. It's a reply to those who are looking for miracles or superstition or paranormal powers. It's all there when the mind is empty. When there's no thought in the mind, then just drawing water is a miracle. Carrying wood, carrying dishes, tying your shoes. Later, Pong went to the other great master of the time, Mazu, and he asked the same question he had asked Shoto. He said, "Who is the one who is not a companion to the 10,000 dharmas?" And Mazu said, "When you swallow all the water in the West River in one gulp, then I'll tell you." And here too, Layman Pong attained another realization, and he stayed and trained under Mazu for 2 years. And then we introduce his wife and daughter, who also said to have been deeply realized. He asked his daughter, "An ancient said, 'Clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers. How do you understand this?' His daughter said, 'So old and great, and yet you talk like this.' Layman Pong said, 'What would you say?' And his daughter said, 'Clear and brilliant are the meadow grasses. Clear and brilliant is the meaning of the ancestral teachers.' And at that, her father laughed." And then what he is most famous for is that he and his family, they said to have taken all their possessions, put them in a boat, and sunk them in a river. And we just have one more story here. When Layman Pong was about to die, he said to his daughter, go look at the sun and see what time it is. Just when it's noon, come and tell me." So she went to the door, looked out, and said, "The sun has just reached noon, but there's an eclipse." She knew he was just waiting for the word, and she's not giving it to him. There's an eclipse, no sun. When Layman Pong went to the door and looked out, she went to her father's seat, placed her hands together, and passed away. Layman Pong smiled and said, "My daughter's deftness, skill, let's say." He then postponed his death by 7 days. And then the governor of the province came to visit him and asked about his illness. And Layman Pong said to him, "I ask that you regard everything that is as empty and not give substance to that which has none. Farewell. The world is like reflections and echoes." And then, placing his head on the governor's knee, Layman Pong passed away. Back to the koan. When Layman Pong took leave of Yaksan, Yaksan's Chinese name is, his actual Chinese name is Yaoshan. The Yaksan is the Japanized version. And it's interesting to note that at this point, Layman Pong had been there for 17 years, training under Yaksan. So this was a big milestone, this enlightened man leaving after 17 years there, leaving. And so Yaksan asked 10 of his students to escort him to the temple gate to bid him farewell. And taking advantage of the occasion, Layman Pong pointed to the falling snowflakes and said, "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." Two other translations. Cleary: "Beautiful snowflakes, they don't fall in any other place." Andy Ferguson, "Beautiful snowflakes, each one not falling in any other place." Can't remember why it is we settled on the one we did. "Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere." It serves. It doesn't matter in terms of the point of the koan. But these others are nice, aren't they? Each one not falling in any other place. Each one falling in its place. This Dharma can be seen from two sides. There's what we call the differentiated side, or the relative, or the side of form, and then the other is the side of the undifferentiated, the formless, the absolute. And seeing things as they are is seeing these two as not two. Like seeing a coin as not heads and tails, but a coin. What is so magical about snow? Well, first is just, it's such a gift in a way. If you can forget about the inconvenience of it, the nuisance of when you have things to do and places to get to, but just in its own right, this wondrous stuff falling quietly. There is said to have been a monk who came to enlightenment at the sound of snow falling. But then as it piles up soundlessly, there is this move toward the undifferentiated. Oneness. Uniform, one form. And no form. It's a movement away from the differentiated, away from name and form. Name and form is a Buddhist term you read in a lot of texts that refers to the appearance of things. We, in our ordinary way of regarding the world, we see it in terms of name and form. Things and people have different forms, different appearances, and they're assigned names, words, that reinforce the idea that that's all there is. There's just the appearance of things, which is just completely everything different from every other thing. But it's the other side that we're reminded of in deep snow. It's hard not to think that this is what brings people together. Maybe it's especially noticeable in a city, brings people together in a heavy snowstorm. This sort of intuitive reminder that despite all of our different appearances and all of our differences, there is something much bigger than us. Something awe-inspiring that mutes these differences. We've heard so many stories in Rochester, because it's part of the upstate New York snow belt, of the lengths people will go to in snowstorms to help strangers, help them out of, get their cars out of snow drifts. It's not just cities, of course. Neighbors, when faced with the awesome power of heavy snow, do what they need to help one another. Then there's the stillness of snow when everything is covered or half covered in snow. It's most dramatically noticed in a city. It's like the volume volume is turned down, all of the ambient noise of cars and other things falls much quieter. Even in paintings, I'm thinking of Asian paintings. There's so much they do with snow, scenes of snow. It's just quieting to look at these paintings. You see the people or cows, whatever there might be, whatever forms there might be, just barely visible sometimes. And what remains visible, the tops of bushes, the tops of rocks, the tops of cars, somehow even accentuated by contrast, by all the snow. Just as silence. It can accentuate sound. And vice versa. We can look at a clean field of snow or a lawn of snow and maybe have a little regret when our tracks mar that purity, cleanliness of the snow. So the kind of regret that I feel every time we're about to start with a teisho, the silence, knowing that it has to be marred through words. A snowstorm is humbling. What little control we have over things. I suppose the same way that any dramatic weather event could be humbling, but in the case of snow, until it becomes enormous proportions, there's a benign quality to it. We're put in our place by something magical and soft, pure, quiet. Continue with the koan. Beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere. So then one of the Zen students named Zenkaku. Zenkaku means literally a practitioner of Zen, asked, "Then where do they fall?" Well, Layman Pong was asking for it, literally. That's why he did it. That's why he called up to see what kind of response he would get. Then where do they fall? The layman slapped him. It's one of the points of the koan. What's he saying with that slap? Whatever it was, it escaped Zenkaku because he said, even a layman shouldn't be so crude. The idea in this monk's mind is that monks are held to a higher standard, so you can forgive a lot of a layman, but even a layman shouldn't act so rudely. He's missing the whole point. Zenkaku, after Layman Pong made his initial statement, beautiful snowflakes, they fall nowhere, Zenkaku threw him a snowball. Layman Pong threw it back and dropped it. And Layman said, though you call yourself a Zen student, old Yama won't let go of you. Yama, short for Yamaraja, the Lord of the Dead. This is in Buddhist mythology, the guardian of karma, who, when we die, consigns us to one rebirth or another. And Zenkaku again drops the ball and says, well, what about you? Another translation is, what do you mean? So again, the layman slapped him. Said, you look, but you are blind. You speak, but you are mute. In our reading of earlier in Sesshin of the Korean Zen master Kusan Sunim, he said in talking about deepening concentration, he said, you have to reach the point where although you have ears, you do not know how to hear. Although you have eyes, you do not know how to see. Although you have a tongue, you do not know how to speak. That is not what the layman means when he says to Zenkaku, you look but you are blind, you speak but you are mute. This statement, reaching the depth of concentration, or although you have ears, you do not know how to hear, and so forth, is something we can confirm, we can experience it ourselves, especially in Sesshin, when we find as the days pass that sounds that were bothering us perhaps earlier in Sesshin no longer bother us. In our concentration, we don't react to sounds as to whatever. Sometimes people early in Sesshin, their first Sesshin, are bothered by the sounds of the stick. Or, if you can imagine it, even the sounds of coughing or sneezing. But these needn't be a distraction. If you find that you're distracted by ordinary sounds like that, I mean, it would be one thing to have a snowblower in the zendo, but if you're just hearing these ordinary sounds, a truck going by, then if you're bothered by them, then you got to take responsibility for that. You got to see that you're not deep enough yet. And there comes a point where Yes, where we have to step in, and if someone were being terribly loud, we'd have to remove them temporarily. In the earlier days of the center, when we were all in our early 20s and working through a lot of issues, if someone was crying too loudly and for too long a period, the monitors would have to remove him or her from the zendo. It happened to me once, and then just wait till it blows over, and then we come back. There's no disapproval on the part of the monitors. It's just a practical thing. When it gets to be too loud, then someone has to step in. But otherwise, we have this power to harmonize with the conditions, this power that comes from a concentrated mind, where we can get beyond reactivity. Reactivity really means karmic obstructions. Karma literally means action and reaction. Action and reaction. Reactivity is when we're reacting to people and things, we are sowing more karma. You look, but you are blind. You speak, but you are mute. And then Secho comments, when Pong first spoke, I would have made a snowball and hit him with it. Just his way of just mixing things up, throw something else in. And we have a verse here. In Doksan, people working on this, and these koans in the booklet record, don't do the verse. But this one is especially interesting. Here's Secho's verse: hit him with a snowball, hit him with a ball. Even the best will fail to reply. Neither heaven nor earth knows what to do. Eyes and ears are blocked with snow. Even the blue-eyed monk can't explain. Blue-eyed monk is the Buddha. Even the Buddha can't explain. How can you explain? Step out into a storm, a snow-covered scene in the hush of deep winter snow. What is there to explain? How can you possibly say anything that can explain, encompass the majesty of this? Finally, a poem by Wallace Stevens. He lived in the early part of the 20th century, mostly, called The Snowman. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place for the listener who listens in the snow, and nothing himself, beholds nothing that is not there, and the nothing that is. Everyone in the session has earned, has worked their way into this mind of winter. So much can grow later out of this mind of winter. This gives birth to all things. We'll stop now and recite the four vows. All beings without number,
I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dark days beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain all beings without number. I vow to liberate endless blind passions. I vow to uproot dharma gates beyond measure. I vow to penetrate the great way of Buddha. I vow to attain.